What's up, everyone? This is Dariusz Kalbaczyk, co-founder of MG Poland, JS Poland, AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the Angular Master Podcast. Today, we've got a special guest from Jelenia Góra, Poland, founder of Angular Space, speaker, Angular architect, NX champion, Angular Wrocław organizer, ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Glazner. Hi, Daniel. How it's going?
Hey, nice to be here. For me, it's going pretty good. I'm very busy these days because other than work, recently I have started doing some community contributions. So it's taking a lot of time and it's hard to do it all with daily life. But yeah, generally I feel motivated more than ever. So yeah, pretty good.
Sounds amazing. So for those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself.
Okay, so I am Daniel Glazner. I'm architecting Angular applications from ground up. I'm refactoring applications and helping mentoring developers since 2019. I think I started working with NX thanks to Manfred Steyr workshops that I have had on MG Poland, by the way, which was very, very enlightening because before that, I had a hard time finding a good architecture for Angular for myself that made a lot of sense. And since then, it did. And I'm doing that to this day. And I have recently joined the NX Champions program, which is basically about getting together people who are working with NX on a daily basis and help community move forward.
How did you first become involved in the Angular community and the process of releasing the new version of Angular?
Yeah, so this is a very good question because I don't recall the exact specific moment I started like interacting and contributing. All I know, I started with Twitter, and I think that my friend Paweł Kubiak has shown me some pretty cool discussions that are happening on Twitter on a daily basis. And I was amazed because this is something that I haven't seen before throughout all years of my career. And I in software development, I think, for around 10 years. And I have discovered that very recently. When I have seen like these interesting discussions happening, I thought to myself that I can be a part of this. I can help the community. I can help some people. I can interact with some people and also learn a ton of stuff. Because, like, previously, when I wanted to learn something, I bought the ticket to workshop and I had limited time and attention of the person who has been driving that workshop. But on Twitter, I have constant contact with everyone that is there and we have very, very large and interactive Angular community and everyone is willing to help and answer all of the problems and questions that you have. So that's why I have joined this very nice community. And I have happened to be around very groundbreaking, let's say, age of Angular, which is like these all enhancements that are coming with new RFCs, new signals, new control flow, all of that stuff that is unheard of when we talk about Angular, because for a lot of time, we can safely say that Angular has been through the long process of stagnation without not too much advancements coming our way. And I know that it was caused with move from Vue Engine to Ivy because it took out work. And I have also heard that. So now, since that's out of the way, more can happen. And yeah, so I have happened to be at the right time in the right place.
How does the Angular team utilize the request for comments RFC process to improve Angular?
Yeah, so I think like, I don't know for sure because I have heard colliding opinions about that. But what I know for sure from my experience with it, I know that Angular team, when they want to introduce some new functionality, first they come to the community, create this big document explaining how this is going to work, what we are trying to do, how is this going to help, and let us know what they think. And we have this large group of community members that are willing to discuss, that are willing to read it, that are willing to propose some ideas, and even question some of the ideas that Angular team has, because they think that this shouldn't be the way, we can do it differently. And I think that all of the feedback is valuable. And I know for a fact that in one of the RDCs, based on that community feedback, Angular team has changed things. We had like, this wasn't a big change. Like, we had methods named from observable and to observe, and from observable and from signal, which were the methods that helped converting signal to observables, and the other way around. And community decided that this is not good, and it will be better to have two signal and two observable. So this change has happened, and this is a example of small change that can go like that. And as far as the bigger changes, I'm not sure how much we can influence that, because this is the first time I'm interacting with RFCs. So I'm not sure if, like, let's say, there would be a lot of negative opinions about, let's say, signals or the new control flow from the RFCs. I'm not sure how much this can be changed, or even if Angular team can at this point back out of some of the changes that are taking place.
Yeah, so what do you think about signals?
I think that signals are a very good advancement in terms of reactivity for Angular specifically, because, like, we all love RxJS. We grew up with it. It's like at the core of the Angular, all of the reactivity is happening with RxJS. But the main problem with that it's complex, and it's both good and bad. It's good because we have a lot of complex operations that we need to do with our logic, and this is very good for that. But we also have some really, really simple dump logic that is close to UI. Like, let's say I want to refresh this value based on this, and let's say I have to make all of these actions, synchronize all of these actions, so all of the values are going to refresh based on, let's say, some of the pattern that I chose. So RxJS can do that for you, but it requires a lot of, let's say, overhead, a lot of complicated operators that you need to use, a lot of things that you need to remember, like subscribe, not subscribe. Like, this is the classic example, which you would think that everybody knows at this point, but going through my experience, I have been a part of a lot of projects. And this is like, it's missing in 60% of the projects that I have been part of. It's still not that common knowledge for people that jump in working with Angular from other frameworks. So I think signals are very important advancements that will help Angular evolve further.
What motivated you to start writing articles about recent SAP RFCs, and how do you approach explaining complex technical details?
Well, I started reading the RFCs. I started reading the comments, and I have to say that we have a lot of senior people involved in the process of the RFCs, like both Angular team is explaining very complex topics, and people that are very senior on the level that they understand how framework is working internally. They are able to discuss, they are able to evaluate these, but we have these kind of people are not the majority. On the signals RFC, I think the total comments was around 1,000, which was the record amount. But this is not a big amount when you take into the account the amount of Angular developers that are out there working with the framework on a daily basis. And my suspicion is because it's difficult to understand. People are afraid to interact because they don't feel like they have knowledge to do so. And so the people have been interacting and saying things that they don't like, but they have been downloaded and, like, the voices haven't been heard because of the overly hyped people around that are always happy. But I think that both sides are needed. Like, you need to hear cons and pros to evaluate thing in the right way. So that's why I started writing articles. I took what we had in the RFCs and tried to explain it in a way that everyone could understand it very well. And you didn't have to have that knowledge of how internals of the framework work. All you needed to know is what is changing, how is this going to affect your work based on what you are already doing. And then you can think about it. And maybe if you have this explained in an easy way, you can go there and place a comment even saying that I like this. It's solid from the technical point of view, but I don't think that this is going to help my work. Maybe this is going to make things more confusing. And that's how I approach writing articles.
How do you think your articles help the community stay up to date and participate in the discussions with the Angular core team?
I think that the main point was that it helped them understand the bigger picture. I have laid down the constant rows in one article so they could take the whole picture in one take while reading the article. And I have seen the comments like for the Signals RFC, I have even prepared like this big summary of concerns from the community. And it was focused mainly on the concerns because like most people were happy, but I have seen that a lot of people were not, but they didn't have that stronger voice to show what they didn't like. So I thought this could be useful for both the community and the Angular team to further evaluate later. And I have received comments that this was helpful because while reading this, somebody even wrote in the RFC that it would take him days or weeks to understand what this is about. So that kind of summary was very helpful.
So how have your action in facilitating communication and understanding of the RFCs helped bring the community closer together?
I think the main message I want to send, and I always try to send it, is that we shouldn't downvote people for having different opinions. We should listen to them. We should go into the discussion, talk about it. It's not like we have two camps, like the Angular hype people that are always happy and some people that are not happy and want to bring Angular down. I believe that we all want to together go and make Angular great, and we all have different opinions, and doesn't matter who is right. We should like let everyone speak and discuss, and let's hear ourselves and let's see what is going to come out of that. And this is I think that's what started to happening, and this is my main message that I still want to pass on, because we now have new RFCs out and we have the same situation. A lot of people that are happy, a lot of people that are not very happy. And the key here is to try to understand each side.
You're listening, Angular Master Podcast. Listen, code, repeat. Everything you need to know to become an Angular super developer.
You're hosting Twitter Spaces. Can you explain the motivation behind them and how they are different to podcasts?
Yeah, absolutely. While I started interacting with the Twitter community and have seen all of these amazing conversations happening, I have also seen that a lot of these conversations didn't come to the conclusion because somebody forgot to answer or didn't bother to answer. It was like, it wasn't like a live, real discussion that we would have. So what I thought to myself is that having this kind of community that is active and willing to interact, I could recreate something that we usually have on the conferences, meetups, where we sit together and talk about stuff, like exchange experiences, say what we have to say about the various things. And everyone can join. Let's say we are sitting around with five people talking, and then three others can join. And with Twitter Spaces, it's possible because when I host Twitter Spaces, I have my main guests that are usually Angular veterans or GDEs or even framework creators like Misko Habery, which I also had on one of my spaces. And while talking through the topics that we prepare, we are taking the questions from the audience live. So anyone can hop on and ask a question to us and we can answer it, or write it down in the comments under the space, and we can also try to tackle that. So I think that this is the main reason and the main difference between podcasts and the other forms of interaction, that if somebody is willing to, he can request to speak, and he can actually speak to us live without any cuts, without any interruptions, and it's like raw and unedited, and a lot of unplanned things can happen, which I also had in one of my spaces, which I didn't plan on, but surprisingly, two members of the Angular team have joined when we discussed the SQL services.
Can you share some insights from Twitter Spaces session with Angular experts and core team member that you hosted?
Yeah, so that space was initially with a couple of experts and GDs to start with. But as we have been discussing, my title has drawn attention of Mark Thompson from the Angular team. And he openly said during the space, like, this is only why he came here. Like, he has seen the title that I have said. It was like, I don't think I fully remember the title, but it was something around, is Angular losing its identity or it's going forward or something like that. So it's like, it was very catchy because controversial titles always bring attention. And he was immediately hooked and jumped in to hear what we have to say. And it was like the exact thing that I wanted to achieve with Spaces. Like, out of the blue, he came in and started hearing us, our concerns, what we have to say, what troubles the community. And he could interact and answer everything live. And he pretty much cleared up all of our, let's say, not issues, but concerns that we had. And most of these were not even with the technical part of the RFCs. These were from the communication that wasn't clear enough. Like, the RFC is very technical, but we always tend to go a little bit further and think about the future. Okay, so now we have signals. So are we going to have JSX? Is Angular not going to be our Angular anymore? Is it going to turn into React? What is going to happen? Like, let's talk about it. Let's hear it, because we are concerned that we might lose our favorite framework as it was. So he cleared a lot of things. And while we have been talking, Alex from Angular team also joined. And he has been also brought up on the stage and further discussed some more technical parts that my guests had and have been concerned about. And he also pretty much cleared up a lot of issues that we had, cleared up that what we have in the RFC is not necessarily what is going to happen in the end to some extent, and that our voices are very important and everything that we say is getting evaluated by the team, and they are going to act upon what the community says. And most importantly, they have both said that they are happy that this kind of things are happening, that we are talking about it, that we are involved, because this is what like makes the community and what will make in the end Angular a better framework.
What advice would you give to developers who are considering replacing RxJS with signals in their projects?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because everyone is jumping right now, taking signals and working with it, which is amazing, because this is what we need to do right now. We have to test it. We have to play around and to work with it to find some issues, maybe to report later, and try to learn different mindset, because with signals, it's going to be different than RxJS. So definitely my advice would be to take it for a spin, create an application, create a project for yourself, play around, try out how it works, how it's different, and hold on a little bit for working with signals in the production code, because it's not ready yet. Like, if you are brave, you can try it, but I'm not going to recommend it for big projects, maybe for your personal projects or some more experimental ones. And I think that what is important to understand is how signals work compared to what we have with RxJS. And I think that a good comparison between what we have is behavior subject in RxJS, which starts with the initial value, and signals also start with the initial value. So if we want to prepare ourselves, our projects for the future, we might start working with the mental models similar to Signals and start implementing our code, our reactive code, in a way that Signals are going to work for us in the future. So one of these examples would be, let's say, from the top of my head, let's say we get rid of the high number of async pipes for our code, because in the future Signals are not going to use async pipes. They are going to be just implemented straight into the template without the need of unpacking the observable, because these are not observables anymore. And what we could do, instead of placing multiple async pipes and multiple observables and unwrapping them like 10, 20 times in a single template, we could implement something like a view model pattern, which is, let's say, combining a lot of observables into one object and unwrapping that one big observable and use the contents of that observable in our template as we would a regular object. We can do that with the combined latest operator from the RxJS and pack in like many observables that we have, close them inside of the object, and then use them inside of our template only with one async pipe. And later on, when it comes to implementing Signals, we can easily replace that with a signal instead of the viewmodel observable. And it will be very, very easier than removing like 20 async pipes from our template if you have that, because it's still not good for the performance if you have it. So either way, it's good to get rid of that.
You have been selected to join the NX Champion program. Can you say a few words about it?
Yeah, so it's a pretty recent program that has been started by the NX team. It basically gathers together people that are involved in the community, first and foremost, and that are experts in NX, have been working with it for quite a long time, and are able to like pass on some of the knowledge that they have and help the community move forward, basically, for the NX. So this is like similar to, I would say, Google Developer Expert program, but only for the NX, not like Google as a company.
But what is NX?
That's a very good question. When I am talking even with the NX team members, everyone has a hard time to wrap it around like in one good description, because NX is doing so many things that it's hard to like easily say what's NX. So like from the original description, NX is a build system that provides you tools and techniques for enhancing your productivity on a daily basis when you work with it. You can optimize your CI performance, you can better maintain your code, which will lead to better code quality, and among many other things, which in the end, believe me, will make your application better. And I have a hard time to justify not adding NX to the Angular app, even when these apps are small, or even if that app is not a part of a monorepo. Even if it's a standalone application, I think NX still brings a lot to the table.
Can you explain the benefits of using NX, even if you have only one app to maintain?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I have written an article about that recently, comparing the monorepo and non-monorepo approach for NX. And when we are talking about one monorepo approach, which is which would be one Angular application and NX, first, like when you, let's say you are starting a project from ground up, when you use NX, you will get your Angular application ready and bootstrapped for you when you are going to generate it with the CLI that you get with NX. You are going to answer a couple of questions, and it's going to configure your app with things that you want to have. Let's say if you want to create Angular application with NGRX, it's going to install it for you. If you want to configure your Angular application with Nest.js as a backend, it's also going to set up a basic template for you. It's going to set up Cypress-based end-to-end tests for you out of the box. It's going to pre-configure the pre-tier. It's going to pre-configure the ESLint. It's going to pre-configure the Jest for testing. So from the very start, you get a lot. you don't have to do it by hand to get it all out of the pretty cool CLI that will walk you through it. And when it comes to using NX, when you don't have multiple applications and you want to use it with a single one, it gives you a lot of benefits in terms of the architecture of your application, how you can approach it. It will like push you in the way of creating your app in a modular way, because it separates your application into apps folder and libs folder. And libs are basically these building blocks from which you are going to construct your application. And with the various settings that you can set along the way, like let's say you can set various module boundaries, you can create rules that let's say you can't import something from this library to this library. In this way, you need to, let's say, use shard library to do it. It's going to create a lot of things in your code that then will result in less coupling, better code quality, and better app to manage, because you don't have to, let's say, run around and chase developers to do whatever you have imagined. You have the rules set up in your code base. You have ESLint that can validate those rules, and nobody's going to commit code that is not going to fulfill those rules. So that's a lot to begin with. And then you can, let's say, you have your applications growing, you have a standalone one, and you decide to move on, add another application, or export some kind of library to the third parties to use. You can do that easily. Because you already have an X, you already have the mindset, you already have the app structured in a way that would facilitate all of those moves. So for me, it's like future insurance for your application. Of course, you can like achieve it without an X. You can use other tool for monorepos, or you don't have to use an X at all. And you are so good and you have such a good team that you will maintain perfect quality of your application. And you can definitely do that without an X. But the next is your insurance policy, which you can always have. And when you don't have that big of a control, or you are setting up application for a company that is going to later use it, and you know that like developers are going to rotate, nobody's going to maintain it in a good way, people are going to change, you always have those rules that are sitting in the code base, assuming that nobody's going to delete them, then you have more you can sleep at night knowing that nobody's going to break it right away.
What do you think about this AI revolution?
Yeah, so it's definitely an interesting subject. And I even asked on Twitter, what about, let's say, adding AI to Angular for the migrations? Because like for the new control flow, I think it would be beneficial to have something more robust, because I have seen things in code that people did with directives that are unimaginable. Nested inside of for ng4 loops inside of ngifs, and furthermore, so I had my doubts if regular migration can handle all of that. So I think that it would be beneficial to think about including AI into some things that we do, definitely, but maybe not at this point, because like we have a big hype on AI, but it's not as smart as it could be. It's like, I believe it's just only the beginning, and it's only going to improve, but I wouldn't fully rely on it right now, because working with AI, I'm using the ChatGPT for like regular expressions and some things that are redundant. I don't think that I want to spend my time learning like regular expressions. I'm using ChatGPT to help me with that. But I recently had an issue with a regular expression that was like obvious, like the one character that wasn't escaped properly broke. The expression worked, but it resulted in the console error in the Angular. And I didn't see it. ChatGPT didn't see it. I asked on the Twitter, and immediately after I asked, I noticed it. But like 2 minutes after, somebody already solved it for me from the community. So I still think that asking community is better than asking ChatGPT. And I can add one thing to that, because I am also using that technology for my Twitter spaces. When I am finished, Twitter Spaces are recorded. I am putting them on the Spotify as in log form audio. But since other people don't have a lot of time, I have found an awesome tool, AI-based tool that allows me to put in audio into that. It creates these short clips. Like, let's say I have 2 hours long Twitter Space, and it slices that Twitter Space into 20 short clips. It automatically sets the title. It automatically cuts in a way where the subject starts when the subject ends. And it's not always perfect, but like 90% of the time, it's very good. It allows me to edit titles and all that stuff. But like, it's a giant time saver, because if I wouldn't have that tool, I wouldn't find time to cut those videos, like create this fun interactive way of showing faces of people talking, adding subtitles and all of that. So yeah, definitely a game changer for productivity. That's for sure.
A movie that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, so I think there's one very underrated movie that I have been surprised that is that underrated. And I went to the cinema. I have been surprised that there were almost no people with me and my wife. I have been thinking twice, like, should we go on that movie? It must be bad. But it turned out to be fantastic. And it's Dungeons and Dragons. Like, I love the plot. I love the action. Like, there was not a single second of the movie that I would cut out. It was very, very engaging, but it didn't sell well. I don't know why. Maybe because of the franchise, of the title, and like, when people think Dungeons and Dragons, they imagine some people sitting in a cellar playing this imaginary game or something like that. But it's really a great movie, I recommend.
What are your hobbies other than programming?
Other than programming, more programming. And most recently, interacting with the community, like being involved in the open source. It has been an amazing journey. I've met a lot of fantastic people, but I guess this is also programming. So other than that, I have another big hobby, which is collecting a single malt Scotch whiskies, which I have been doing for quite some time. I stopped recently, but I have quite a big collection. And I have tasted over, I don't know, let's say 300 different bottles. It's not like getting bottled and getting drunk. It's more like pouring a little bit and nosing it, smelling it, tasting it, and writing down the notes, how it tastes, what it resembles. And yeah, this is a very exciting topic, which I don't want to bore you with because maybe you are not interested, but it's very complex.
Book or books that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, so I'm going to be very boring here because I'm not much of a book reader, like horror movies, fantasy, criminal books, etc. The only books that I read are technical books, unfortunately. And what I can recommend is the Manfred Steyer book on the BDD pattern for monorepos. He has a great free book that I can recommend. There's a lot of great knowledge in there. The other book that I can recommend, my friend Thomas Tryon has a great book about the Angular architecture, which I can also recommend. And another, my friend Greg Gilliatt, has a book on change detection Angular, which is very great and goes very deep into that topic, that I can also recommend.
Okay, Daniel, thank you. Thank you so much for this amazing discussion. It was a pleasure to host you. And yeah, one more time, thank you for your time and for a lot of great information.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a very interesting experience to be on the other side of the mic, since I usually talk to people and ask questions on my Twitter Spaces. Yeah, much appreciated. Thanks.
Super. Thank you so much.